It's now time for the Wallops and Assateague Islands Report. Here's your host, Robin Rothschild.
Good afternoon. I'm Robin Rothschild, and welcome to today's Wallops and Assateague Islands Report. I'm here with Keith Kohler. He is Public Relations Specialist for NASA. Hey, Keith, how you doing?
Good to be here.
Well, it's good to have you here.
Glad we made it in with all the snow and everything.
I know.
Wasn't quite sure here.
When I emailed you this morning, I was like, you know, let me know if you can make it. But,
Oh, yeah.
You know, but thank goodness there's always we're always possible to reschedule.
That's right.
But we didn't have to today, so it's all good. Keith, you know, when we were talking, I mean, Keith and I have known each other for years, and Keith's been on the program for years. But because we have a lot of new listeners, I asked you if we could start a sort of back things up and start with the very beginning, especially about NASA's Wallops flight facility and the new rocket launch, that cost $95 million. So why don't we kind of start from the beginning, and I'll let you have the floor.
Yeah, if you look at the history of Wallops, I mean, we actually go back to 1945. At that time, the government was looking at a launch site to do some air-to-ground or ground-to-air missile testing. And so the folks down at the what would then call the Langley Aeronautical Laboratory in Hampton, Virginia, was looking for a launch site to do that. And they ended up selecting Wallops mainly because it was close to Langley. It's on the water. And at the time, we also had the Chincoteague Naval Air Station located there. And so they were able to get that support. And so that's why we started. And from there, by the time they really got started and established, the war was ending. And so they looked at using these rockets, these suborbital small rockets, for doing aeronautical research. And the idea was that at that time, aircraft were getting into the supersonics, you know, speed of sound flight. But we didn't have the wind tunnels available at that time to really do testing on models and things. So the idea was basically to develop a wind tunnel in the sky, so they would put aircraft models on the end of these rockets, run a wire down to the ground that would provide the data that they needed on how the air was flowing over the rocket, over the aircraft, and then they would launch them. And then from there, in the 60s, these rockets were starting to use them, what we would call sounding rockets, was to take measurements. And so we started taking measurements of the atmosphere, and so learning how to do a lot of the information that we now understand about weather and you know, what is are involved in our atmosphere was done with these types of rockets. And so, and now we're using these same rockets to take measurements in space, sounding rockets. And so that's kind of where we started. And over the years, we started, you know, evolving more into doing some aircraft missions, which we still do today. And then in the 80s, we also started using large scientific balloons for doing these types of things. So today, all that's involved so that NASA Wallops is now, you know, the NASA's premier site for doing suborbital research, looking at doing flights, not necessarily in orbit, but we do research beyond orbit. So we look at the sun, and even yesterday there was NASA had a press conference looking at some of the most intense images and highest resolution images ever taken of the sun have been taken with a experiment, new telescope that was put on top of a sounding rocket. So even though, you know, it's suborbital, it still has a lot of work in both science and technology development.
Now, from the what we call now sounding rockets, you know, I've been to a few Minotaur rocket launches. Right. So then did this Wallops and NASA decide at Wallops to get more into the medium-sized rockets?
Actually, we've been launching satellites since 1960. it's not well known, but we started launching what was then called the Scout, which was a rocket developed, again, out of Langley. And it was the idea of flying small payloads, satellites, into orbit. And they were also used for suborbital research, looking at when spacecraft were re-entering the atmosphere and understanding radio transmissions and those types of things as we were going along. And then the Scout was phased out in around 1987 as we started bringing the space shuttle in and everything was going to be flying on the space shuttle, and the fact that the satellites started to getting larger. And so the use of the Scout was phased out. And then in the 90s, the Orbital Sciences Corporation brought in the Pegasus rocket, which was an air-launched rocket carrying small satellites again. And so in the 90s, they started doing that. And then around 2006, we launched the first Minotaur, which was a ground-based rocket. You know, it's an Air Force vehicle, but that's when we really started getting back into the ground-based systems.
And I did not realize that was just in 2006. That was your first one?
That was the first, first Minotaur 1 was in 2006. And so we have another one coming up later this year of the Minotaur 1s. We have a Minotaur 5 scheduled for later this year, which will be our first moon mission. And then we also have the Antares coming on board. So in the orbital type of rockets, it's really becoming more of an operations rather than the range becoming more of a what has been typically a test range. It's now entering more into an operations, but still holding on to the test capabilities that we have at WALS.
Right, because you do a lot of that. I know that's a
we do
big,
a lot of the
big
new
factor.
Technologies and testings that things they won't do at some of the other ranges. So, we're glad to still be able to hold that capability and be able to do new technologies and new rocket vehicles and those types of things.
Now, of course, you know, the big talk is this upcoming Antares rocket. That rocket is being built to and launched to service the International Space Station.
Correct.
And now, was it, correct me, Keith, because, you know, we've been working together for a couple years. Was that 3 years ago when Wallops got the contract for that? Is it four years ago?
Orbital Sciences got the contract.
Okay.
They got a $1.9 billion contract from NASA to provide cargo to the space station beginning this year, and it runs through 2015 is the current contract. And Orbital had, did some analysis and selected Wallops as their launch site.
That's what I was wondering.
And they, they tell us that the reason for that is they were familiar with us working with Pegasus, and we've been doing sounding rocket programs with them over the years. So they're familiar with how we worked. And also they wanted to fit into the Wallops model, which was, keep things efficient, low cost, and work to get the job done. And so they liked our work ethic that was here at Wallops. And so that was some of the main reasons why they wanted to fly out of Wallops. And so so that's coming along. I mean, the Mid-Atlantic Regional Spaceport is finished the launch pad now. And so the team is now working to do some what they would call cold flow tests. They're running the liquid oxygen and the other fuels to the rocket, first stage of the rocket on the pad, and testing out all the pad systems and the first stage systems on the rocket. And then they're pretty close to finishing those up. Once they finish that up in February, they're looking at the probability of doing a hot fire test, where they will take that first stage of the Antares rocket. They have it bolted to the launch pad, and they're going to fire that thing for about 29 seconds. So, we'll let folks know when that's going to happen. It's something different, something we've never done before. And
that's always fun.
and so people will hear it, and they will feel it. And so we'll definitely, keep people in the loop. And then, provided all things work well there, and they then will take that the first stage down, check out the launch pad, refurb that, any, damage that occurs that be repaired. And then they'll look at their first test flight of the Antares. We're looking at March.
Wow.
With the first, then that flight will just be a test flight. So it's just going to go up, and they'll just check out the rocket systems. And then the first flight to the space station is looking at May or June right now. So
it's hard to believe that it's really coming up, because it has been a couple years in the whole process.
It's been a few years since, we just opened up the, the horizontal integration facility where they're actually building the rocket up was just a little over a year ago,
Jeez.
Was the groundbreaking. So for that, or the ribbon cutting. Everybody's come a long way to get ready for this this flight.
Now, this new launch pad, since we do have a lot of new listeners at different radio stations now, this was a $95 million launch pad, correct?
Somewhere around there, correct, and it's funded through federal funding. The state of Virginia putting a lot of money in it. It's their launch pad, obviously, and then Orbital also supported that.
Now, is that launch pad primarily for the Antares rocket, or will other rockets be able to be launched from that pad?
It's primarily for Antares at this time, but anything that NASA builds, or even, you know, the Mars folks, the Virginia Commercial Space Flight Authority builds, is going to be a multi-use facility. So
that's great.
So that was built in mind, that there was the possibility of maybe some other medium launch vehicles may want to fly out of here. So both the integration facility and the launch pad were built with that in mind, that there could be other users.
So now at Wallops, there actually are, you can launch three different size rockets. Really?
Right, we have the suborbital rockets. We have several launch pads that we can do from those rockets.
And those would be the sounding rockets?
Those are the sounding rockets, suborbital rockets. And then Mars also has the pad that they've been using for the Minotaurs, which is basically for solid fuel vehicles. And so the Minotaurs, the ones, the fives, will fly off of that. But they could also, again, fly other vehicles off that pad, just changing a few things around, and they can accommodate that other solid fuel vehicles. And then you have the newer pad, which is what they call Pad 0A, which is for liquid fuels. So right now it's built to support rockets that are fueled by liquid kerosene, kind of in a liquid oxygen mixture. And so, right now it's built up for that, but we have also looked at the master plan and you know, if others come in and decide they want to build that, we're trying to figure out, okay, how do we, you know, work that with all these other pads currently in place and also still, you know, maintaining the environment, you know, things that are out there. So we want to maintain that. So we're trying to juggle, you know, the needs and of the, especially the commercial folks who are now building these rockets and the pads and also maintaining the environment and also, you know, the NASA needs.
It's very exciting though. It's pretty amazing to have this right in our backyard.
There's a lot going on. I mean, we have all this new things coming on, but we're still maintaining, you know, the work that Wallops has been known for. And as a matter of fact, we have a sounding rocket launch coming up, currently scheduled on the 29th. I'm not sure if the snow is going to delay us from doing that, if we're going to have to slide a day or not. We'll find out tomorrow. But yeah, we have a rocket launch in the evening, so you won't have to get up early to watch the but it's also a chemical release, and so we'll have and we'll be releasing lithium vapor trails, two of them out of this one rocket. And so that's going to be kind of neat to be able to see.
You'll be
that.
Able to see that.
So you'll be able to see that here in this area, right? That'd be kind of cool. And so we're looking at, I think, at a launch time between 5:30 and 6:45. 6:50 is the window. But we'll narrow that down as we get more into the review tomorrow and as to what exactly they want to do. So that's going to be kind of cool.
Now, you know, Keith, I mean, Wallops is, especially now, is so known for its rocket launches, but there's a lot of other activity that happens out of Wallops.
Yeah, I mean, we have the balloon program for one. We're just finishing up our annual campaign down in Antarctica. And actually, we have a balloon currently flying down there that has broken our duration record for flying a long-duration balloon out of there. And so I think it's currently something like 46 days. I haven't looked at the web this morning to see what the days were, but it's been flying for 46 days or something like that. And we still have another 8 to 10 days to go before it's in a position to finish that mission up. So we had three successful flights down there in Antarctica this year.
And can you just touch on what exactly these balloons do and what they're measuring?
Yeah, the balloons are not your normal or ordinary party balloon, as I call it.
No huge. Hot air balloon.
They're not a hot air balloon. They're huge. At launch, typically they're taller than the Washington Monument. I think the one that we're currently flying at full inflation, it can fit 200 blimps inside of it. So they're big. The saddle or the spacecraft that we're or experiment package that we're currently flying is about 6,000 pounds. So it's about the size of a large SUV that we're flying up there. And the way it works is that it's really interesting in that the balloon is a very thin film. It's kind of like almost a garment bag material that we fly them in, but it can lift, you know, these thousands of pounds. And so it will go up to about 30 miles altitude. And once it gets up there, it's going to have a little bit of helium at launch. But then as you go up, the atmosphere changes, and so the balloon can expand and fill out the balloon material. And so we'll fly anywhere from 12 to 24 hours typically. But when we're in Antarctica, we can fly for days or weeks or even this time, months that we're flying these things. And so you can fly different, you know, space detectors and looking at x-rays and gamma rays and telescopes and things like that. And at 30 miles up, you're about 99% above the atmosphere. So, you know, it's very clear and you don't have any, you know, interference from pollution in any of the atmosphere when you're doing these types of experiments. And so so you'll do the experiment, and once the experiment is done, you start to bring the balloon back down, and you look, we have an aircraft that will go up when we're flying in other areas. Antarctica is not nearly as an issue, but you go up and send the aircraft up, and you look for a clearing to finish the flight out, and so you'll send a signal. The balloon rips open. There's a parachute that actually sits between the balloon and the experiment that you're going to be flying. And so when you open up the balloon, the parachute releases from the balloon, brings the experiment back gently. And so you can go back and recover that and bring that back and give that back to the science guys. And they can recover their experiment and hopefully fly it again another time, make some tweaks and make improvements, or use components for another type of an experiment. And so then the balloon materials, we go out and pick that up and as much as we can, and that gets trashed because you're not going to be able to fly that again. But we fly about 15 or so of these balloons a year at different sites, either in New Mexico, Antarctica, Sweden. We fly from there. We're getting ready to do a flight, I think, next year out of Australia for a super pressure balloon, which is the idea of developing a balloon system that we'll be able to get 100 days. And with these 100-day balloons, we're not going to be limited to Antarctica. We can fly at other locations and be able to fly closer to the center, the equatorial regions of the Earth when we do these flights.
That is just, it's just astounding. It sounds like science fiction.
It's cool. It's, to be able to see these things fly. I mean, it's not, everybody likes rockets and you like the roar and all that kind of stuff, but a lot of science is gathered using these balloons and development of new technologies. And all the things that we do, you know, the rockets, the aircraft, the balloons, also they're all seen as really good uses for education.
Yeah.
And that because of the quick turnaround that we have on all of the types of things, suborbital type of things that we fly, it's 6 months to 2 years that typically from the time that, you know, the scientist has decided, has picked a fly to the time that we fly him. So it's a very quick turnaround. So a student working on their doctorate doesn't have to wait for years and years and years for a satellite to be developed and launched and then get their data. So they're able to actually use hands-on approaches, and they're actually, you know, can help build the experiment that they're going to be flying, and they get to take part in actually flying it, and then they get their data back and start doing the analysis to get that. And then for the younger students, all of these projects involve undergraduate students and students working on their master's degrees. And so, and in some cases, we even involve high school students. And so it's a good way to get students to understand, what's involved in doing science, and not only just developing the data analysis, but how do you build the stuff? And that's the key part to getting that.
I mean, just even seeing the material that this balloon is made out of is pretty spectacular.
Oh, yeah,
I'd love to see that myself.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. If a company down at a group, I think it's Sulphur Spring, Texas, that builds that, and it's several football fields long.
Because didn't you have an open house a couple years ago that you had the balloon laid out?
Well, we didn't have the balloon. We had the balloon from the parachute on the bottom of it, but we didn't have the balloon material itself. But yeah, it's that we did bring that in for this last one, and so hopefully maybe we'll be able to get a spent balloon and be able to lay that out and give people an idea of actually how large these balloons are.
It's hard. It is hard to to think, when you know, even when you say it, how big it is, it's just hard to even imagine how big.
Yeah, unless you're there seeing it, it's hard to really grasp the size of these things. I mean, even though we say, you know, 200 blimps are the size, you could put the Astrodome inside of one of these things. You know, it's still...
You just can't wrap your head around it that easily.
Exactly. That we're flying something the size, and then when you see the material that these things are made out of, it's kind of cool.
You know, something that you were just talking about, though, is that you do a lot of educational activity there at Wallops. Is that common for most of these launch sites, or is Wallops particularly into that?
Well, it's cool for, I mean, it's common for NASA. I mean, NASA is, I mean, we do cool things.
Yeah.
And so, you know, kids are automatically drawn to what we do. I mean, whether it be robotics or we're, you know, building things and launching things into space and that kind of stuff. So it's neat for kids to do that. And so, but I think what the Wallops niche, as we call it, is that we're able to do the hands-on stuff, and that you can build an experiment and launch it. You can attend a rocket launch. We do a project in June that we call Rocket Week, and we do that with the University, our Colorado Space Grant, Virginia Space Grant consortiums, and we have undergraduate students from across the country, and their teachers come in, and most of these folks have never been involved in building an experiment before, so they're learning how to solder, they're learning how to program an experiment. And so they actually come in, and the folks from Colorado come in, and they teach them how to do that. And then we integrate it within days. Their experiment gets put on a rocket, and then they get to attend the launch. So
yeah, there you have it.
There you have it. You can't do that elsewhere. And to be able to do that kind of thing. And then also that same week we do what we call the Wallops we have a teacher workshop that week. And so we have high school teachers from across the country, and many of them are local, and middle school teachers come in. And they also, during that same week, they're learning about rocketry and what goes in, and some of the physics and the math, and how can they take this information back to the classroom and you know, to excite their students about what we call STEM, which is science, technology, engineering, math, and how can you get them excited about doing that? And so they get to attend that launch also. And so we're out there, you know, bright and early at 6:15 in the morning, you know, waiting for this rocket. But you have anywhere from 100 to 120 students and teachers out there to watch this launch. And it's cool.
And
they get to be able to get to you know, get the
and hands-on.
Hands-on.
I mean, really,
The key is, especially with students, is the hands-on. I mean, everybody can sit there at a computer and do things, and you can pull up things on the computer, on websites, and do some data analysis and things. But to actually build it and you know, get to be able to take part and experience that is something different, and that's what Wallops provides in the education aspects of things.
Well, Keith, thank you so much for coming in, and boy, you know, it's always just great to talk to you, because I always learn something new. I know, it went by fast.
Yeah.
We've got to have you come back, because I'd like to, you know, really get into the educational aspect, what you do at Wallops, because I know just from hanging out with you for a couple of years that it's amazing, and we are so lucky that all of this is right here in our backyard.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot coming up in the next several months. I mean, we have the moon mission coming up in August.
Yeah, I want to hear more about that.
We have the Antares launch coming up. You know, we have a mess of Sandy rockets. We're going to Kwajalein, Marshall Islands here in April. We'll be launching 4 rockets out of, you know, the Central Pacific. And so, I mean, it's just a lot going on this year for the folks at Wallops.
Well, fantastic. And Keith, have a great day.
You do the same.
And we'll be talking to you soon.
Sounds good.
That concludes today's Wallops and Assateague Islands Report, brought to you by Orbital Sciences Corporation. I'm Robin Rothschild. Have a great day.
This has been the Wallops and Assateague Islands Report on 90.7 WSDL.